announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
Welcome to a special edition of the FRB show. I was going to say the filthy FRB show, but Tom Lawler is in Alaska on vacation.
Spending that big money he just won.
God only knows what the fuck he's doing there. And we're getting the beer delivered.
That's the beer gimmick for FRB.
And if you haven't figured out by now, I'm joined by Chael Sonnen and John P. Marini, if I'm saying his name right. And I have a bone to pick with John there's the beer. I'll wait till he carries in the beer before I cut this promo on him. But Chael, do you have an idea of what I'm still upset about?
Well, I have a feeling it has to do with our WrestleMania tickets, because I don't think you've had a ton of interaction with him in the past.
But, yeah.
I actually prepped him when you were in the cab on the way over.
Yeah.
I said, you know, FRB isn't crazy about those 5 hours when we were in an RV driving to WrestleMania and you text us and said, I don't know if the tickets are coming through.
Let's back up real quick to the beginning of the podcast. Did you get the gimmick website that I said? Was that recorded?
Or Ashley Madison.
I mean, or either one of those. Yeah. Was that recorded?
I mean, my name's probably out on the internet anyways on that site, so.
Are you part of that? Here's the good news. 32 million people, if you are part of it, 32 million people apparently got released. Is that number accurate? I heard 32 million people.
I don't know.
Well, John, tell us who you are.
Nobody.
Well, tell us a little about yourself. When did you get out? How long have you been out?
You're hanging out with us. So you gotta be
something. Actually.
Yeah, you're in the suite.
You know, I mean, I'd be better probably if Chael introduced me. That's usually how we do it when we go out.
So, John is a brilliant guy, if you really want to know. He used to write for the WWE. He still writes. He lives in Southern California. He recently wrote a piece for Saturday Night Live. He helps me with a lot of material. In fact, we're out here in Vegas right now for Jeff Jarrett's show tomorrow, Global Force Wrestling.
And that SNL bit, that got cut, actually. That never actually got used.
That is true. And I've got a spot tomorrow, a small segment. John wrote that. So that's who he is. John is our friend. He's good people. They got on the wrong side of FRB for about 5 hours.
He got on the wrong side of me. So WrestleMania in Santa Clara, California, a few months ago. And we had the opportunity for our good friend Jerry Briscoe to get us some tickets. And we said, you know, Jerry, hey, we got it covered. You're always very helpful to us, but we don't want to take from you this time. Well, let's just call it even for now. We got this other jabroni that's going to give us tickets, and everything's going to be great. So Chael tells me, because he gets this information from John, we're going to be in the Miz's suite. Yeah, Chael, you take that.
He did say the word suite.
Yeah.
He said. I didn't make that up.
Okay, so let's finish your story. Finish your side of the story, then we'll get Chael involved, just so we can all kind of chime in.
Well, John made himself out to be like a big deal because he used to write for the WWE, that he's friends with The Miz, so I thought he had a lot of connections and was going to get us in this suite. And I was thinking, because the weekend before, I was with Chael in St. Louis in this suite at the Nationals.
NCAA.
Yeah, NCAA Nationals. And I thought it was going to be a similar situation, that I could get there and just drink the whole time for free, eat, you know, talk to who, you know.
See the action.
Yeah, actually see the action. There was a huge pillar right in our purview. And, you know, so we're up in these fucking nosebleeds. And Chael has an image to uphold. And the only thing that saved us is Daniel Cormier had even worse seats.
So what you're saying is I got you better seats than him.
That's right.
Well, so I'm already ahead. I'm already ahead.
We should have been better seats than Daniel Cormier, though he had just taken my job.
That's true.
Okay, so let's backtrack now and really get the, we're all here, we can get the full story out. So Chael tells me, hey, I'm coming to Mania, are you going? I go, yeah, I'm going. All of a sudden, I go, what's your situation? Briscoe got me a couple seats. And I go, oh, okay. A couple weeks later, I tell him I'm going to be in Miz's suite. A couple weeks later, he calls me back. He goes, hey, you still going to Mania? Yeah, you're in Miz's suite. Yeah. So, can you hook me up with a couple tickets? I go, I thought you got tickets. And this is what? Got to be a day or two before the show that I even know this. He goes, oh, yeah, no, I gave those away. I figured you could hook me up and get me some seats.
Yeah, right.
So last minute, I go, I'll let you know. He calls me the day I get into wherever it was. And he goes, hey, so I literally don't have a way to get in unless you can get me tickets. So I used my original tickets that I had. I was going to sit in those seats that then I passed on to you guys. Now, originally I did tell Chael I think I could get him in the suite. This is before I knew he's bringing anybody with him because he said I gave away my ticket. So I go, oh, yeah, it probably shouldn't be a problem getting you in the suite. So day of, I find out about the suite, and they go, no, this is different. Every suite is taken. God, this story's so boring. Every suite.
It's dragging a little bit.
Bottom line is, those were the comp seats for you guys. I couldn't get you into the suite because it was broken down into everyone needed a ticket.
Right, that's
I didn't
why
even
you
have
pissed
a ticket.
Brian off. Were you pissed? That he is mad about that, but he wasn't fully pissed off. Where he got pissed off was he and I are in a rented RV. We haven't slept. We drove from Portland to California. So how long is that? 11 hours?
Yeah, 12
hours. It was 11 wonderful hours. We actually
had a blast.
I'm not complaining.
Yeah, who's driving?
We all kind of took turns.
Our friend Tate.
Yeah, our buddy Tate drove us out there. Yeah. We stopped by in Sacramento. We did a Garth Brooks concert. Shoot up to San Jose. We had a killer time. However, the trip has begun. Okay, he's flown in from North Carolina. We're 8 hours into an 11-hour trip. When you text us and say, hey, I'm not sure the tickets are coming through at all. Not just you're in jabroni seats, forget about this whole suite gimmick. You're like, I'm not sure I can get any tickets.
Now,
that only lasted for a brief period, but it sent Brian into a freaking tailspin. That's where you pissed
off.
You
never pass along the bad news, Chael. You wait for it to get complete. And second,
I knew I had to prep him.
Both you guys are huge marks. You don't want to be in a suite with free alcohol, celebrities, all that stuff. You guys are much better out there. You enjoy the show. And to be perfectly honest, Chael told me you're short. So if I would have got you floor seats, you wouldn't have been able to see the person in front of you. So let's be honest. That was the best seat you could have had.
But you said it was the Mrs. Suite. It was more like the Mrs.
Yes, he did. Those are his words.
Section that was like...
Well, and why is the Miz got the jobber section?
No, I was in Mrs. Suite. No one said anything about where you're sitting. I don't know where the confusion is at.
I can't argue. It's been too long. I can't argue.
I didn't even get my story right. You had a better one than me.
Yeah, John could be telling that right. But we were in the nosebleeds. But here, Brian, if I may, there's one other part of the story that so you and I had killer tickets. It was my Christmas. You arranged this with my wife.
Right.
She got you money. You went out on Christmas and got these tickets. So you and I had these great seats. We then had our buddies say they wanted to come.
Sure.
We were ticket short, so you and I pitched in, gave them our two seats in exchange for John's seats that he was going to get us. But in you and I's minds...
But before you gave away your seats, you never checked with me.
Well, we thought we were getting the suite. So when Brian and I gave away our expensive good seats, we actually thought, you know, our friends are going to think we're nice guys, but secretly Brian and I are going to be in even better seats.
The suite seats aren't good.
Right, then you come up, well, and neither were the ones you got us.
No, but the booze is free. That's good enough for me.
That's true, yeah. Well, I apologize. Next
year
we'll get it.
The air is conditioned.
Yeah. Again, I just thought you'd enjoy it more out there.
Well, we did not. Yeah. Well, we're grateful for the tickets.
There was a giant fucking column. We couldn't see anything.
I'm sure you can tweet to at WWE and complain about the comp seats that they handed out to everybody. I mean, Cormier, right?
Yeah.
He took your job. He had a same seat.
Not only did he just take my job and sit in it, and Cormier's a great guy, but not only did he do that, what really pissed me off is he's a Seth Rollins mark.
Really?
From the beginning.
And you hate Seth Rollins.
I don't get Seth at all. I completely disagree with the push that he's been
getting. You didn't like his picture of his cock on the internet?
He lost a match, Brian, and 1 hour later was world champion. That happened. You can be as mad at me as you want for not getting the skunk hairdo and the whole bit. He got beat clean by Randy Orton and 1 hour later was holding the strap. I've got a fair complaint.
Yeah, he's no Rusev, that's for sure.
They've ruined that guy, huh? Ever since they took Lana off him?
Yeah, that's a bad story for sure. But
no, but Lana's his for shoot girlfriend, correct?
Yeah.
Does she stay with him or does she blow with the storyline?
Man, I wouldn't be surprised if this story is someone trying to get in between that for shoot.
I read they bought a home together in Nashville. For whatever reason, they live in Nashville.
Yeah, they do. They live together, yeah.
Yeah. And they say you never put those types of storylines in a pro wrestling angle. You know, and they always point to Nancy Sullivan and Kevin Sullivan, which is the most extreme example.
Dust. Yeah.
Yeah. Or Goldust or Rena Mero.
Goldust and that blonde gal,
Terry Runnels.
Yeah, they hit Splitsville too.
From what story?
Marlena. Her name was Marlena.
Is that what her name
was? That was her character. Hey, John, I need another beer.
Cold beer gimmick.
Yeah. I was just on a fucking plane 6 hours.
Wait a minute. What do you know about the Goldust story?
There is no story.
Well, they did split.
They did split. I just, because we were talking about
Jake the Snake Roberts' wife with the Rick Rude angle. It happens all the time. These characters mark out for their own gimmick. It happens all the time.
How about Deborah McMichael and Steve McMichael?
Sure.
Yeah. And who, then Stone Cold. You
know, she Steve has
McMichael,
not changed.
The biggest jobber in the history of Four Horsemen.
Who would you say is a worse Four
Paul
Horsemen?
Paul Roma's worse.
Yeah, Paul Roma or Steve McMichael.
Honestly, I thought it was Steve McMichael, and I watched wrestling, I watched the Four Horsemen, and I know Paul Roma, and until you just said that, I never knew he was a horseman. So I guess it goes to him.
Yeah. Do you think you can outdrink Ric Flair, FRB?
No, I don't live that far from Ric Flair. So I know of his shenanigans, I know of his robe. You hear all the stories like he likes to wear his robe with nothing underneath and in public places and then just flash it. Everybody thinks that's just a big joke. No, that's for real. And because he's Ric Flair, he just never gets in trouble for it.
And shouldn't.
Yeah, he's got a
fake if the robe stays closed, he shouldn't be in trouble.
No, I'm saying he will open the robe.
Well, then we got problems. That's not great.
Have we announced that we're literally all under the covers in this bed in this hotel suite? Like, this is like a old school, like, Playboy channel confessional kind of thing going on. It's kind of cool.
You know,
the kids
are going to believe that.
You know, when I was walking through... yeah, they will. I was walking through the front door here at the Orleans, and I had a flashback of the last time I was here. It was 8 years ago. I saw George Carlin do stand-up at the theater. And I think within 8 months, George died. He died the weekend Forrest and Rampage fought. Yeah. I remember seeing it on the internet.
For the title? Like, the first time?
Or yeah, Forrest won the title. And, man, George Carlin, his material is just legendary, timeless type stuff. Are you a fan, John?
Yeah. I couldn't tell you any of his bits off the top of my head, but he was great. I mean, he hosted the first SNL.
Did
which
he?
Was great.
The first ever?
I think, yeah. And I think there was a story where he either pitched it or the original concept was he was going to be the all-time host. Or he pitched something like that. It obviously didn't happen. But
my favorite bit was he was talking about the people that want to save the planet. You know, save all the animals, all the endangered species. And he says, you know, something like, we don't even know how to take care of ourselves. And you're going to save the fucking planet? Let me tell you, the planet's just fine. The people are fucked.
That's a good bit.
It's a great bit because it's kind of anti. Everybody thought George was kind of this left-wing lunatic. When really, if you really analyze a lot of the stuff he said, some of it was right of center. Some of it was very libertarian. And then some of it was very liberal, you know, like he started talking about abortion and things. I think his line was, how come the women that are against abortion are the ones you wouldn't want to fuck in the first place? You know, he opened up live in New York in 1996 with that. And that just has stayed with me ever since a very impressionable young FRB.
That Save the Planet stuff is weird, though. You know, you'll have these people that talk about, the sun's going to burn out in a billion years, and then the Earth will be gone, and you're sitting there and go, so what?
Yeah,
so what?
Isn't the first planet we've been on, so we'll find another
Let the sun burn out and let civilization go away in a billion years. And all the things you want to do to change your life to protect it, to what, preserve it for an extra hundred?
Well, George's point was, he called them these self-important bourgeois liberals, that they're not concerned about the planet in the abstract. They're concerned about being inconvenienced, about not having enough bicycle paths.
Sure.
About the ocean view not in Malibu not being as nice as it used to be. Mm-hmm. They don't care about the planet in the abstract. They just don't want to be inconvenienced.
Sure. But the whole thing is fake. You know, if you're pro-Earth to the extreme, then you're against the human. Because the only thing that disrupts the environment is the human. So you can't go too extreme on environmentalist, or you're against the species of human beings, yeah, which is weird. And secondly, science is crap. And when's somebody going to finally admit that? Not one of your listeners, and you have hundreds of thousands of listeners, not one of them is a scientist.
You could have stopped at hundreds.
I thought he was going for a second.
But not one of them's a scientist. And I could go even further. Not one of your listeners listening right now, yeah, even knows a scientist. Do you know what it means to be a scientist? Like, if you want to be a lawyer,
you got
to
get a PhD.
Go to school, there you go. You gotta pass the bar exam. There's an actual certificate that comes with being a lawyer. Same thing goes with the doctor. You got school, you got tests, they issue you a certificate, you're a doctor. To be a scientist is like being a nutritionist or a counselor. You just raise your hand and proclaim, I'm a scientist. Do you ever see the scientists talk about the dinosaurs were here billions of years ago? They put an S at the end. Billions. Well, when? Were dinosaurs here 8 billion years ago? They're here 5 billion years ago? That's a huge gap. This is supposed to be science, and you can't prove any of that. You can't prove they were here more than 1,000 years ago or billions of years. Yeah, science is a bunch of crap.
Do you know about
none
this
of
show?
It can be proven.
Yeah, I mean, they're all... I mean, here's the thing about scientists, is they're wrong just as many times as I am when I make a statement.
But if you make an argument and you say it's science, you win the argument. And you should not. In a court of law, it holds up if you say, well, it's science. No, it's not. You cannot prove that. And there's no scientist. That's the other thing. Also, nobody's a scientist. Prove it. Tell me who's it. Your uncle, your aunt, your cousin, your neighbor, your friend. Name one.
Yeah, have you ever met one?
No. Yeah. Jason Mahan Miller, and I'm not joking. He is a self-proclaimed scientist, and that's a quote. He gave a TED Talk.
Works
and
then
wrote
he is.
On there. So, yes, he is a scientist.
Yeah.
If you raise your hand and say you're a scientist, you are. There is no barriers of entry. Science is a joke. Have you guys ever heard about? You guys have heard this. It's one of those laws that light never ends.
It never
prove ends. It. You can't prove to me light never ends. That's a ridiculous. They said you could outdo the speed of light. You could essentially catch up with history because those images are still out there. Prove it. You cannot prove that. No scientist can prove that. And that's a world belief. When I was growing up, Ms. Juris's sixth grade class, guys, there was 7 planets. And if we had a test and you didn't write down 7 as the number of planets, you got the answer wrong. They've rewritten the book since I was in sixth grade. Now there's 6 planets. Now you've got guys coming out and going, well, no, there's thousands of planets, but he's not identified. This is science.
There's more than that.
When you were in sixth grade, was your wife alive?
Okay, let's do the math. She was born. I was a senior in high school, she was a first grader. And that doesn't sound good. Okay, that doesn't sound
good.
You
were a senior in high school, she was a first grader?
That's right. 12 years. And those 12 years are going to come in handy at some point.
What year did she graduate high school?
Like 07.
Do you know?
Yeah, 2007.
She graduated high school at 07?
That's right.
She's born, what, 89?
No, she didn't. Come on. 07 high school.
07? I have... This shirt
she's
is
She's 20
older
years
than
old.
That's funny.
But you know,
I don't know how old she is. 26? She's born in 89.
She's 26. I actually contacted her.
No, she's 26.
Her.
No, she's, well, Windsor. Yeah, I mean, my girlfriend's 20, turning
woman.
26.
So I actually contacted her today because I wanted some material to torture him with. And,
did
you know, being the good
someone?
Wife, she didn't have anything really good.
Did she answer the phone upside down?
Well, I texted her. I didn't bother her.
Answer the phone upside. I don't even know what that means for sure.
Well, he's trying to. It's a blonde joke, right?
Oh, okay. Oh, right? The phone upside. I thought
I
perhaps
just made
like
it
she
right
was
up.
Upside down, like
joke
a
scientist.
Well, was
joke
my point.
Scientist. Yeah.
Okay.
Science.
So she says because
dinosaurs billions of years.
And this is probably. I think this is the first time I've seen you since Thero was born. Thero Stevens' son. And
yes.
Your firstborn.
Future Olympian.
Yeah, 2036.
Yes, Olympic. Likely a gold medalist.
Gold medalist
for sure, Olympian.
And
not if the Russians have anything to say about it.
Yes, they will be a problem. So will the Iranians. But his sport's undetermined.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think Brickney wants him in like football. It's a head trauma.
Yeah, that's a real thing.
But let me finish the story. Really
yeah, go
she
ahead.
Says
who
she
says it's a real thing though. Tell me who says it's a real
scientists.
Thing.
She says that you do this weird gimmick when you change his diaper.
Okay,
like
what?
Like you throw him in the shower or in a sink and wash him off instead of like using a wipe. Like I did. What do you? How do you change Thero?
Okay, so you wouldn't believe the technology out there for babies right now. I mean, all the way down to the crib will cost you a fortune. And I tried to get. I'm like, cribs are no problem. My neighbor's got one in their garage. They already offered us.
Sure.
Well, apparently that's very disrespectful in the eyes of my wife to put your newborn on a used crib. Now, I for the life of me don't know why that's disrespectful. But apparently it is. So $1,600 later, we have a fancy crib that like Kim Kardashian endorsed or something like that. But I mean, I could keep going through the nursery, if you will, on these different things that had to be a certain way. So bath time is no different, Brian. They have, there's a thing you put, there's a thing that sets into the shower that they, the baby then sets in. And when the water hits it, it will let you know the temperature and it will signal if it's, if it deems it to be too warm or too cold. Now, my hand under the faucet will determine what is too warm or too cold. But
sure.
Apparently, no, it's this tough thing. So, to your point, yes, there are times when I'm in charge, when it's dad duty, when I will be changing the diaper, and I won't go upstairs and turn on the shower and check with Kim Kardashian's signature series, there, Jessica Simpson's, or whoever's endorsing it this week, that my wife thinks is cool.
All great mothers, by the way, should be endorsing
it. You see, John,
that's why
I'll
go over to the sink.
John, I was concerned, you know, not concerned, but I thought, hey, it's probably going to happen. You know, Chael's going to, he has the son. He's going to forget about, you know, his friends like Reese and FRB and John Primarini. He's going to just forget about all these guys. But no, it's gotten worse. He bothers us more. He bothers us more. 3 a.m. I live on the fucking East Coast. I got to be up at like 6 a.m. He'll fucking call you at 3:30. I'm like, hey, what's up, Chael? He's like, what are you doing, buddy? Like, well, what the fuck do you think I'm doing?
And see, I blame Brian. I blame Brian for answering. It's like when you feed the stray cat and
yeah,
he comes
exactly.
back. If Brian never would have picked up and humored me the first time at 3. And then that's the other thing. He'll also keep me company for a while. So he'll stay up from 3 to 5. And he's like, dude, I got to get to sleep. I'm going to work at 7. He'll grab himself another 50 minutes of sleep before he jumps up, jumps in the shower, gets his breath, and goes to work. So... yeah, I'm a little bit guilty, but he's guilty for being such a nice guy and always picking
up
the phone.
You just don't answer the phone.
Right,
no,
you just
the
don't
thing,
answer the
yeah.
phone. Put it on airplane mode.
But explain to the people the little system that you have in place, because you've implemented shifts to take care of young Thero.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, no, that's basically it. Mama's got day shift from 8 a.m., 8:30 rather, to 8:30 p.m. Then I take over from 8:30 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. My shift's a little easier because he sleeps at night. But he's up every 3 hours to eat. So the theory is that my wife can at least get a good night's sleep, which is really every new parent's biggest complaint is they're just zombies. Yeah. So she rests up, and then she's got energy to, you know, keep him company in the day.
When you potty train him, can you walk me through the process of where you're going to take him exactly?
In terms of...
let's say he gets
to the... sink. Sink versus... are you back on... I don't know a damn thing about potty training yet. I'm just hoping they
but let's say the day comes and he's like, Daddy, Daddy, I think I gotta go. Can you walk us through what you think you might do? Let's say it happens right now.
Drop your pants, walk outside, figure it out. That's how we did it. I grew up in the country. That's how it worked.
Yeah.
We ran around outside naked. And when you use the bathroom, you just went to the bathroom. Now, it's easier for boys. I don't know that my sister had the same program going, but...
Now, Chael, you're closely associated with West Lynn, but you grew up in Tualatin or Milwaukee? Which one?
Born in Milwaukee, but the only relevance there is that's just where the hospital was.
Okay.
And then my actual address growing up was Tualatin, but it was the West Lynn School District, of which I have always...
And that's Milwaukee, Oregon, by the way. It's another town.
Right.
Not the... not Ben Askren country. So, John, do you have any kids?
No.
Yeah, I don't have any kids either. So, this whole kid, yeah, it is an easy life. Like, I really don't do anything other than, like, go to work and then, like, you know, come out here. people are asking, why are you going to Vegas? You know, my friend's doing this professional wrestling thing, and I just thought I'd go hang out, and, you know.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, you know, so many parents, one, they do complain about being tired, but they talk about how it changes your life and all this stuff. And I haven't felt it, and I've even thought, well, man, is there something wrong with me? Why have I, you know, emotionally it does. It changes why you live and what you live for, and, you know, you've got this responsibility that you need to prepare for the world. But my wife and I do everything the same, largely because I have a great wife, you know, like single mothers or single fathers for that matter. They couldn't travel for work. I got to travel for work.
Yeah.
But when we're home, we do all the same stuff. If we want to go somewhere, we put him in the seat. He gets in the car and we go. We go to same amount of, you know, restaurants or over to a friend's house or.
Now, I don't know, John, have you been up to Westland to visit Jill?
No.
You see, a lot of people would be surprised. Like, Jill's such a homebody. I mean, it is impossible to get him out of that house. Like, I think he came out of the house once when I came out to see you 3 years ago.
I do not leave that house.
And you only did it because out of, like, I don't know if the right word is respect for me, but, like, because I was in town.
Or guilt. Or obligation. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those three. Like, I wanted you to see a good time.
Yeah, you felt obligated.
Chill, that's the house you said that you had before UFC?
Yes.
Same house?
Same house.
Did you change it at all?
Well, yes. My wife came in. I think that's just part of, they call, with girls, they call that nesting.
Sure.
But very, very slight. I mean, I'm talking about some carpet and some paint.
She walks into this house you already have. You now have some money.
But we're forgetting it. He lived with our other buddy, Reese.
In that same house.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same house. Yeah, exact same house.
So she moves in, but Reese is still there for a little while.
Yeah.
And where'd he go to after this?
Well, he moved to Tualatin, which is the next town.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, and he still comes over, like, for dinner and stuff. And he and my wife are, like, the
so
best
it's got to be,
friend.
Like,
They're
a
like
modest home then, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love it. It's in a very safe neighborhood. It's a real family neighborhood. Like, the kids go outside in the street, and they use the chalk, and they draw four squares, and they just play in the streets. The dad's walking. You use the street like a park.
Yeah.
Everyone that lives there knows that, so you drive the streets about 3 miles an hour instead of 25, which I think is legal.
And all the kids, like, draw pictures, like, when Chill is gonna fight, like.
Yeah, you can put them on my door.
Yeah, you put them on your
door. Even if I get my ass kicked.
Yeah, they don't know.
Nah, they'll still come put something cool on my door that I come home to. Yeah, so it's a really friendly neighborhood. As far as the house goes, I mean, it is a pretty modest house. I'm very comfortable there. I'll die there. I'm quite sure that I will never move, but. It's the same house I had before I was in the UFC.
And it's got room for a family then, obviously.
Yeah, it's got, my son has his own room. He's in a nursery. Yeah. It's got a little office space. It's over 2,000 square feet, right around
there. Hot tub in the back?
Little hot tub in the backyard. Yeah, the backyard's tiny. It's just enough for my dog to run around in. And just barely.
Yeah.
But there is a hot tub in the back, which is a nice luxury when you're sore and tired.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing because a guy like him who's been on some of the biggest pay-per-views in the history of the business, right? You'd expect him to run out and, I don't know, buy some kind of fancy car, buy some vacation home. I don't think the guy's bought a fucking thing. And, like, I mean, you still have that truck?
I sold the truck, but I didn't replace it with a new one.
This is a truck from 1998.
Yeah, I sold. Yeah, that's true. I sold it, but I didn't replace it with a new one. Now Dana gave me a car for the Ultimate Fighter, so I have a car.
Right.
But no, I've never bought a car. I got
you
my
share
wife
it?
One.
Oh, you bought her.
Yeah,
a car.
I got her a car, but I've never bought myself a car. And I've never thought of it like that. I've never thought of myself like as a frugal guy. But I guess if you work it through, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit.
A car, so.
Chael, we're on the subject of family here. FRB, it sounds like, is good friends with her.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I'd like to know, like, you know, when you and her are together just talking, the types of things she says about Brian, of course, the things she says about me most importantly, but can you break some of that down for
like
us? To
give a history lesson, Brian and I were actually together as friends before I met her.
Okay.
So our history updates, so I mean, he's literally known her from day one, but I don't know if you're I feel like you're trying to set me up for a joke, but she has never said she's never said anything bad. She always wonders what was. See, when I go on a trip like this and you guys come, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
You're going to ruin my bad reputation, though.
Exactly.
I get the same thing.
She likes to know that we're sitting around, we're in Las Vegas right now. There's all sorts of stuff goes on in Vegas. There's plenty of things to do for entertainment or distract oneself. We're sitting in a hotel room, and yeah, we're in a suite, and it's pretty fancy, and we got some good spread up here as far as food goes. But we're sitting around doing a podcast, right? I mean, a guy's whereabouts could weigh on somebody's mind. Well, she knows this is documented, so, you know. I think if anything, she would be should be quite happy with you guys.
There, that was actually not a setup to a joke. I was literally just curious what she says about me.
She hates you. Okay. She, no, I mean, is that, what kind of answer? Do I, even if she, I don't feel that I could be honest in this case. If I'm it was negative, now in this case, it happens to be positive. But
now your wife, I mean, I was very proud of her. She cut an incredible promo.
On Crosby?
On Douglas Crosby.
Oh, wow.
The judging genius.
Oh, God.
And I'm definitely not going to go into the details of it, but I was like, you know, because she's a young girl. I just didn't think she had it in her. But, man, she bowed up, and fucking Douglas was in tears. He texts me, like, Brittany told me off. And that was before Douglas fired me. And sure. He doesn't talk to me anymore.
Have you not spoke to him?
No, because I like Douglas, and I'm not going to say why, because it could jeopardize some things for him. So he asked me to do something, and I didn't want to do it.
I asked him about that yesterday.
What'd he say?
He said that is not what happened. Now, I know that it is what happened.
I can show you the text.
I saw the text message, but he's like, that's not what happened. And I just let it go. I was like, okay.
Didn't you just judge him?
You know Douglas?
Only through Chael, and I do know that he recently judged a fight that... And I don't remember the fight, but
It was Michael Johnson versus Deluge. He totally fucked it up.
Now, whenever he gets in trouble, I've only missed like 3 or 4 to 5 at the most UFCs in my life. And I think they've had about 200 when you count the fight nights and everything. In my existence on this planet, I'm a huge fan. I miss this one. So I didn't get to see the Johnson fight. But I will tell you, in Douglas's defense, and I did read the things, and I heard it was bad. I heard it was very clear. It was a bad call.
In his defense, the stats were real, like, mirror image.
But every time he gets in the hot seat for making a bad call, it's a split decision, and one other judge agrees with him. See, that's the problem, is he always ends up the bad guy, but he has another trained, expert, professional judge that agrees with him. Two of the three, see... You know what I'm saying? That's what a split decision is. So the odd man out is allegedly the one that got it right.
Interesting, yeah.
But Douglas ends up in trouble. I don't even know who the other judge was. I don't know who either of the other judges were. But Douglas's name ends up in the media.
I think it was Sal D'Amato.
Was it Sal? And who's a very good judge?
Is he a boxing judge?
I think so. A lot of them do both.
You know, I have a question. And you could even chime in with this, FRB. You know, when the McGregor fight happened, and I remember, I think I was talking to you here last time we were in Vegas about it. And, you know, you get these people, these new fans that come in, and the hype is around Conor. And Conor wins, and people immediately go, oh, I don't know, that looked staged, or, you know.
Right.
Chael, being a man on the inside, and FRB knowing how it works on the inside, is it possible that not just that fight, but you could fix a fight? And I'm not talking about Chael and Anderson going in there. I'm talking about Dana, the judges, the referees. Is there a way to fix a fight?
There is a way to fix a fight. Now, you could never keep it a secret. I mean, we're doing absolute conspiracy here. Could you do it?
Yeah.
Yes, you could. Yes, you could, and it's happened in boxing. This is in a million years, Dana White would not touch something like, because he doesn't care who wins. So many people get that wrong, go, oh, Conor's Dana's protected. But Dana will make the same amount of money off Conor, and if he doesn't, he'll find somebody else. And so many people throughout the history of the UFC have thought, oh, it's over. You know, Tito just walked away, or Randy just retired, or Anderson just popped, or what? Numbers are going up, and mm-hmm. Dana will replace him. The same thing happened to Vince, you know. When Ted Turner got involved, to compare this to wrestling, and bought everybody. Ted bought all of the talent all the way down to Hulk Hogan, but then he bought the writers, he bought the referees, he bought the camera guys. Ted Turner bought everybody.
He brought in Virgil.
Sure. And Vince did go down for a little bit. Now, and then Vince soared, and now Vince owns his company.
Exactly,
those great promoters, the Dana Whites, the Vince McMahon, They'll always come back and business will always be good. And the fans will always come out and say, this guy's protected, or he's so happy that guy won. Come on.
Yeah.
Was, the numbers only go up. It's silly and ridiculous. Now, but you could fix a fight. Sure you could.
Now, John, while we're talking about professional wrestling, I don't think we gave you a proper introduction. What is your background with WWE?
So I spent 2 years writing for them, 2009, 2010. God, I almost want to. I'm trying to like give you guys an era, so you can kind of.
Now, I heard that you were the guy who came up with Lord Tenzai.
No,
I'm wrong.
Yes,
Matt Bloom.
Yeah, that was after I left.
I don't know.
Almost immediately after I left.
Who's the Prince Albert? You remember?
Oh, okay, sure.
Who is the jabroni?
I think that was Triple H, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. Cause that was Triple H's project. Wow. You can kind of tell when a guy is a Vince or Triple H creation. Fandango. A Vince creation.
Yeah.
A guy that comes out and gets.
Why did Fandango die off so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, my guess is he pisses somebody off. I mean, because he's Vince's guy. I mean, I'm only speaking in terms of how I know it works and what I see, because I wasn't there.
What
for
was
him,
it, but his second or third, or no, first match in WWE? He goes over Chris Jericho at WrestleMania?
Yeah. And I think even Jericho came out and said, you know, Jericho was there when I was there, and he was world champion a couple times while I was there. He was one of our top guys, and then he's kind of slowly we were writing him out because he was leaving, and we were having him put guys over, and he was always open for it. Look, I'm one of the only characters that can lose, and it won't really affect me. But then it kind of started getting to the point where it's like, look, if you want me to put this guy over, I got to know this is the guy. I'm not just going to start jobbing everyone.
Start and stop it is what they call it in the business. Start a guy and stop a guy.
So if he put Fandango over. At WrestleMania, they had plans for Fandango. What happened after that, I don't know.
Yeah.
And Lord Tenzai, were you going to ask me if I created him and then go off about how horrible of a character he was?
Well, I wasn't going to go and cut a promo, but I think everybody would have just...
Make that connection on their own, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a great gimmick, and you can see how long it lasted.
If there was one or two really good things that you want your name next to,
I mean,
Jack Swagger's done great.
Yeah, I mean, the things that I am the most proud of while I was there, and you know, I kind of went in there and I said, look, I want to take a guy that is not in the main event or a main event level guy, and I want to, you know, make him a world champion. And I can say that I think that I played a major role in really three guys doing that. And that was, The Miz, who was pretty much a joke. And then I kind of took his character over. And then he went on to headline WrestleMania, beating Cena, which is huge.
Yeah. We'll never hear the end of The Miz main eventing WrestleMania because CM Punk won't shut up about it.
Oh, really?
It's all he talks about is like The Miz main event at WrestleMania.
In a negative way, Punk doesn't like it.
I think he just looks at it as like, you know, he never got his shot, but The Miz.
But
here's the thing, and I'm a big CM Punk fan, and even when I was there, he wasn't getting much of a push, and I used to always tell the other writers and in meetings with Vince, I honestly think if we pushed him right, he could be one of the greatest heels of all time. And I think he showed that. The thing with Punk, though, hold on, in defense of The Miz, not because I was involved with it, but in defense of The Miz, when I was there, the pickings were very slim, and he was probably the most entertaining character on that show during that time. I don't think there was another guy there at the time you could have put in his position. Punk, yes, but he also wasn't being booked properly. Getting Punk in those positions, which I did try to do, you just hit roadblocks with him. But yeah, there was The Miz. Swagger is another guy I took from literally being a comedy act to winning the world title, creating Alberto Del Rio, which ended up, I think, maybe being the best heel at the time.
Del Rio was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, did you know the jabroni that he slapped the shit out of?
I don't know. I don't know who it was, but you know what? From the story I heard, you can't talk like that to
anybody and not expect to get slapped in the face.
This is a backstage story. I actually don't know. Is this what took Alberto Del Rio off TV?
Yeah, he got fired because this social media manager made some joke that, you know, like, what was he, cleaning up a table, and he said something like, that's Del Rio's job?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's a Mexican?
But apparently this guy had a history of making remarks like this, and Del Rio knew it. So I think it was just the kid was due. And from what I understand in the story is that Vince brought Del Rio in and talked to him and essentially said, look, everything's cool.
Right.
I guess somehow the story gets out, though, and he has to, being a publicly traded company. I gotta let you go. But I don't think normally he would have been dismissed on
Where's Del Rio now?
Well, he was just on Triple Mania, which was one of the worst pay-per-views in the history of professional wrestling. Yeah.
Whose part is that, TNA?
No, that's AAA. Mexico?
Oh.
And okay. I think he does Lucha Underground, too.
Does Lucha Underground.
Which is a good show.
It's a really good show, really expensive to produce. I don't know if they're going to be able to come back for a second season.
Why is that?
I said the El Rey network is just bleeding money on the production aspect of it.
Oh, so they need someone to come in and fund it.
Right, or they need one of those Mexican channels or Spanish-speaking channels to pick it up, because then they can get in, I don't know, pick a number, tens of millions of homes or whatever.
Sure. Yeah, he was talented. Del Rio was good, and so was his manager at the time that would come out.
Oh,
they had
a
hot spot there.
Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a worker. We brought in guys. We brought in a bunch of guys to audition for that spot. He was actually a worker, though.
Yeah,
I think he ended up working after. Like, they ended up breaking them up at some point. I was gone at that point. And then he went down to, like, NXT and was working. He's actually a talented worker. I can't remember his name, though.
Ricardo Rodriguez. Yeah, that was his
name. That was his work name, yeah.
Yeah. So, chill. Just to switch gears a little bit, you've been working out of late. You've been back.
I told you.
You know,
fit.
Yeah, you're looking better. The jiu-jitsu thing you just got fucking bored of. You know, you were the new face of jiu-jitsu. You got fucking bored of it. Is that an accurate?
There just wasn't enough opportunity with jiu-jitsu. I think that's the whole problem with, I don't know that jiu-jitsu has a big problem, but I think that I would like to see, I'll word it this way, I would like to see more competitions that guys can enter. You know, these jiu-jitsu gyms are packed. Jiu-jitsu is like the CrossFit of martial arts, if you will. You can make a good business on jiu-jitsu of all ages, kids all the way up to the adults like me. But there's nowhere for us to compete. You got some opportunity with Metamoris, which is awesome. You have Abu Dhabi, which is incredible, but it's only once every 2 years. You know, it's tough to find matches.
Let's set the record straight about Metamoris. Because I've been very vocal about Metamoris. Bottom line is they don't pay anybody. They promise a lot of money, and then they don't pay them. And I don't know. Do you have any?
Well, I believe for their last show, they had a spot. They had some kind of an issue that happened. They had somebody had hacked into their internet feed, which hurt their revenues.
That was
they
me, by the free,
way. Take the great heel move right there. So they got hurt there, and they had a sponsor that didn't come through. So they've had to play some catch up, but they are making it right with guys. Yeah, if you would have asked me this a week ago, it might have been a different answer. But they are making it right with guys, and some guys have been paid in full.
Just in case you change the subject, if you're not, I'll wait. But
so, do you want to announce what's next with them?
Well, they're doing a show on, I believe it's on October 24th. They're not totally committed, but they're getting real close to pushing the green light. I have been training for it to wrestle Josh Barnett, but it isn't official yet. It's not. They don't have the official date. Josh and I have both agreed to the match. It will headline it when if it does happen. If it doesn't, I suspect there'll just be a different date. But that is really all I've got, and I think it'll come through. I think that Halleck will put it together.
Now, you're training, you know, you're training for grappling, of course, but you're also training MMA for the first time in over a year. Now, I put two and two together, and I'll be totally honest with you. I don't buy your retirement gimmick.
Is this where I respond?
Yeah.
I'm definitely retired, but as far as president, here's the thing. When I stopped fighting, I gained weight like that. I also mentally, you know, they say when you exercise, you release endorphins, you get a high from it. You know, I've exercised ever since I was 9 years old, so I never knew any difference. When I started taking time off, you know, physically, not only were my clothes not fit anymore, but mentally, I didn't feel like the same person. So I don't really have anywhere to exercise at, except MMA gyms. I'm not huge into CrossFit. I could go join 24-Hour Fitness. I do like lifting weights, but joining an MMA gym was a good opportunity to work out and stay involved. And, I mean, that was really it. I'm getting some good workouts. I don't have a great story for you.
If you came back and you can't say Weidman, who would you go after? And I'm talking about
if I was full, back today.
You come back today, okay, full Chael Sonnen gimmick.
Okay.
You're gonna set your sights on someone. You're gonna cut a promo, and you want that fight. Realistic. You can't say Ronda. You can't say GSP.
Yeah.
Realistic. No, you'd actually get in the cage if they accept it.
Okay. With today's landscape. And again, if you would have asked me 30 days ago, it'd be a different answer, and I'll tell you why, because I would have gone back to middleweight. Now, with this new IV ban, I think guys are going to change weight classes, and I think I would probably stay at 205, too. So that changes things. Staying at 205 changes things.
Then you can't say Cormier. So if you're sure. going to say 205,
well, I understand. Yeah. I got to be realistic. I understand. You're not going to walk right.
No, I think it's realistic. It's just too easy. It's an easy answer. I'm going to go after the champ.
Okay.
I just want to know.
See what you're saying.
Yeah.
Who at 205? I suppose I'd have to take a quick look at the rankings and see who was where.
FRB,
but,
throw some names at
Rampage.
Oh, perfect fit right there. Rampage Jackson would be a perfect match. Now he is on ice. I just had him on my podcast. He's jammed up. Vanderlei Silva, that'd be a huge box office. We've got a history. Weight class works out. He's on ice. It doesn't match up.
There's a legendary fighter who said he's got one fight left on his deal and he wants to fight it. Rich Franklin.
Yes.
You called him out for 6 years and he never said a word about you.
That's right. And see, Rich Franklin would make some sense too. Rich Franklin is one of the few guys
Not
who
for
in his
him.
Career multiple times. Say that again.
Won't make sense for him.
Well, thank you. A few times in his career, he's got to fight at what's called a catchweight, 195 pounds, which...
Yeah, he did that quite a bit.
I've always had a fantasy that would be 195-pound weight class, right. So, Rich Franklin would actually make a lot of sense. That escaped my mind, but you're right, I saw that same interview. He also, I visited with him on my podcast, he told me that too, that he's got one fight left. You know, but there's a few guys, I guess I would just need a little time to think.
Well,
about weight class.
Or both Nogs in the same night. Fuck them.
Yeah. Nog isn't a bad answer. You know, he just had his, you know, whatever shit. But you're going to go up and down in that sport. I've always wanted to fight Glover. I've met Glover. He couldn't be a nicer guy, so cutting a promo on him wouldn't be that hard. But I remember when the hype bandwagon was coming through, I'm going...
You thought I could beat this
wait
guy.
Wait just a second.
Yeah.
Hold on just a second here. So, I don't know. I don't know, but that's not my attempt to get something going with Glover either. I'm just trying to think of guys off the top of my head here.
Before you move on, too, and this is just me asking because I'm curious, why is it that, like, Josh Barnett seems to be, like, the Brock Lesnar of jiu-jitsu?
Yeah,
like, just rolling through guys.
Don't insult Brock. Are you shitting me?
I'm just curious.
Brian
whether
and Josh have heat, by the way.
Okay, whether you like him or not, we'll leave MRB out of this.
What's so interesting is... I admire this guy. I like him. I'm a fan of
this. Yeah, he's good.
But I said some shit a year ago about Metamoris, and I guess Halleck or his cousin said, go after this guy, try to embarrass him. And he cut promos on me.
Sure. He was a little more sensitive than I thought the world's baddest dudes would be.
But I had to bark back.
Sure.
I can't lay down.
No, you got an ego.
No, that's good. But my question is, he's not, I mean, he's a wrestler. He's cut from the same cloth as you.
No, he's not.
Is he not?
How many Division I scholarships was he offered?
I don't know.
How many times All American?
What is his background?
How many times freestyle?
I just always saw him as a wrestler.
Nothing.
That's Brian is right. Josh wasn't given opportunities post high school, but he was a high school wrestler and then went into this.
But that's where he came from, right? He wrestled. And he said, "I'm going to go into MMA."
Yeah.
My question is, how is he such a? I mean, he's over here beating. Who did he just beat in the last one?
Well, that guy, Dean Lister. But that was fake.
Oh, yeah, but
he
was a fake
Gracie
fight.
After that. He beat Gracie.
It was the brother.
He's 182 pounds.
Okay. It wasn't Henner.
It wasn't Henner. It was Henner's, his brother. Henner's brother. But point being, he shouldn't be this dominant.
It is surprising how dominant he is.
Is it the size, though?
Largely. However, most big guys aren't real slick. They're kind of slower and they get fatigued. He's slick and he doesn't fatigue. It's very bizarre for a big guy. So, jiu-jitsu's always brag that they don't care about, we don't care about weights, we don't care about weights. Well, the reality is, in that form of grappling, the smaller guy has the advantage because he's a little quicker. He can get to positions faster.
He can match that.
Josh is the only guy that he can go on his back, on his feet, he can find submissions all over. He's really unique.
Is Josh, take out going into an octagon, because it's a different fight. Is he the baddest man on the planet?
Josh is one of the greatest MMA fighters of all time. Now, generally when you talk about a heavyweight, because that's the easiest weight class there is, right? Generally when you talk about a heavyweight, you will say he is one of the greatest heavyweight fighters of all time. You'll classify
him. Yeah.
In Josh Barnett's case, and Brian, you tell me if you disagree. He's my next opponent, and you got a beef going with him. So I think if you and I are complimenting him, I think it adds to the fact that this is a shoot. But if you look at what he's done and when he did it, he tapped out Dan Severn back when that mattered. He was 19 years old. He was a 19-year-old boy. He went over to Hawaii and tapped out Dan Severn, the UFC champion, with an arm lock. So Josh Barnett did all the stuff in Pride. He was the UFC champion, never lost his title in the UFC.
Right.
He left his title. He never dropped that belt.
Well, he didn't exactly leave it.
What happened? Did he get jammed up?
He's gotten popped three times. I mean,
that wasn't back then, though. What did he?
With the UFC?
Yeah.
Yeah. He against Randy, right? He beat Randy, and then his next fight was a New Japan MMA. New Japan's a wrestling promotion. But yeah, I mean, I'm not naive enough to say. Everybody was clean. So it was probably everybody was juicing.
But he got hit.
He was dumb enough to get caught three times. Because he got caught before he was going to fight Fedor, caught after Randy, and then there was some baseline testing that he popped for.
Before his fight with Fedor.
We're talking three.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that's two more than you. Because and other people are going to say, no, you forgot the one in California. And let's correct that for the issue.
Right.
Your suspension was reduced to 6 months because it was a disclosure issue.
Right.
It wasn't you were using an illegal.
And I was completely innocent in California. I've always copped to it. If anything, they're going through this stuff. My credibility has been maintained because I'll tell yes, that happened. But in California, I was 100% innocent. I tested positive for a legal substance.
You told George Dodd 3 days before the fight.
In writing.
Yeah.
I had it signed and dated by their executive director. And they came to me and said, well, you didn't disclose it to our doctor. I'm going, why would I have to disclose it to a subordinate? I went to the executive director and they said, no, you didn't. Well, I had it in writing. And I submitted. So they said I didn't. And I submitted proof that I did. And then George Dodd said, yeah, he did. And they still found me guilty.
No,
it's like you guys got to be kidding me. I tested positive for illegal stuff. You got to read your own rules. You don't know your own rules.
And Chell, the other thing that people they don't talk about, your T to E ratio is 17-1. What was your total T?
Right. See, and that's all that matters.
You were low.
I was low, but a T to E ratio that is so misunderstood.
It's not a substance.
It's not a substance. I could be 100-1 T to E ratio. If you take T, your T goes up, your E doesn't. Well, that gap is your ratio. And people never understood that. They thought I had 17 times the legal limit. Like, no, you guys don't know what that means.
So the people who made the rules don't even understand what
when
the rules
I got
are,
to that no. commission hearing, John, I had no idea that they didn't know their own rules. We were about 3 hours into it, a 3.5 hour hearing. We're almost 3 hours into it when it dawned on me, oh my gosh, you guys don't know that this is legal. It finally hit me. I'm like, I wanted to tell my lawyers, we got to change course. They don't. They're not making the connection here that I've tested positive for legal substance. They just kept saying you tested positive for this substance, and I go, yeah.
What was?
Yeah,
the,
I did. I took it.
Didn't Anderson?
And I'm allowed.
Just go in. Let's really figure this out. You made a joke one time about how Anderson Silva conveniently will forget English.
Sure.
And I can't even remember because he's convinced me he doesn't know it now.
Sure.
Am I wrong? He's spoken English before. So
Perfect.
He just, yeah,
Perfect
he just
English.
Went to yeah. the same situation you were in. And he, does nobody call him out and go, listen, you can't
no.
do this.
But what was so funny,
gets called out.
The guy in the commission who swears them in said, "Do you, Anderson, will you raise your right hand and repeat after me?" And he said, yes. So it was like, yeah, there were parts of it where he went back and forth. Oh, I don't understand. I need Uncle Ed.
Right.
You know.
And then parts where he gets it. Yeah, it's very bizarre. When I was on UFC tonight, we interviewed him, and this was via satellite. So he couldn't read our lips. He couldn't say our body language. He just stared at it. He didn't even see us. He never missed a beat. He answered it. It was a great interview. After he beat Nick Diaz, we interviewed him on ESPN set live. No interpreter. He sat down in between, and he was a great interview. He understood everything. So there's no two ways about that he understands English. Now, that was very weird that he put up a defense at all.
Would you say he's fluent?
I believe he's fluent.
Very fluent.
He's what I would call fluent. Yeah, he could be an interpreter for other
Brazilian guys that don't speak it. The very beautiful girl that was translating for Mr. Eccles.
Yes.
Mike Mersch's wife.
Yes.
I don't know her name. Very beautiful. Put it this way, Anderson spoke better English than she did.
Wow.
By far.
Who was playing that music? Wasn't there some weird music?
There was some fan, you know.
So you could have walked into that hearing? You personally?
No. They had the conference call number. Somebody leaked the conference call number.
Oh, so a caller called in and played, like, music with sexual...
Yeah. Like salt
like
and pepper.
Someone would play like, let's talk about sex during his
I did not
erectile
know
dysfunction. It was great. Yeah. I didn't hear it, but I think you were tweeting.
Another
about
one
it
was like
yeah.
me so horny.
Yeah, it was great.
But why he would put up a defense, you know, these tests are pass fail. It's either in your substance or it's in your system or it's not. The end.
Yeah.
And so many guys that get in this jam want to explain why. And it's always this silly me to, I didn't know. It's like, it's just stop everything.
And that part of the story never comes out.
Right, just take your suspension and walk out.
Yeah. He talked himself into a year of suspension. I think they were going to give him 9 months if he just said yes.
A year from that day?
No, a year from January 31st.
So he's almost done.
He's almost done.
Yeah.
He walks out of there. And he just about goes in the training.
Speaking of Anderson Silva, how did your nephew finish in the Little League game?
Thank you for asking. They won two games, and then they actually got pitted against Oregon. Now, he lives in Washington. Our state's touch. He's about 30 miles from
my
house.
Is this Corey's
kid?
Puts
him in a different state. Brittany's brother's son.
The one that I met? Or
Yes. So it would be Ryan's son, Carter.
Oh.
At any rate, starting pitcher. Playing for the Little League World Series. They won two games. It was on ESPN. It's a big deal. So they won two games, and they got pitted against Oregon, their neighbors, right? They go to the Nationals. They got to play their touch state, and Oregon beat them. And you want to know how they beat them? Carter's team, my nephew's team, was about to win the game. They're about to win the whole thing, ninth inning. The third base coach touched one of the athletes. There's some rule that can't happen. So as the athlete's going into home to score.
Touched.
Yeah, which would have... it would have tied the game 8-8, but they had another batter on base, another runner on base. He touched him, violation, strike, out, game over. They lost 8-7.
Quickly, is Jeff Jarrett no-showing this podcast? Just curious. He was saying he was going to come up here. And then
text him, and text Karen. I got some questions for Karen.
Well,
because
wait, you asked Jarrett by tweet. He didn't say yes, did he?
Because apparently, Karen, I have a friend of mine who was at some party in Nashville after the UFC fights, and Karen was having a good time.
Yes.
I was just going to ask her about it.
They went. The Jarretts went to the UFC. He's never seen
very respectful
UFC,
way.
Yeah. Including on television.
Yeah.
Jeff never watched a UFC. They
your legend
Nashville,
is that big
he
that
went
he
live.
He you transcend MMA.
He loved it. He had a great time, but yes, he is such a pro wrestler, eat, breathe.
Tell the story. He was seated behind two legends of the sport, and he texted you and said, hey, who are these guys?
He sent me a text, yeah, who are these guys? And it was Robbie Lawler and Matt Hughes. And that's not a knock on them at all. It's just, it's a straight-up genuine fact that he does not follow MMA. Now, that's unique. Because MMA fans are all wrestling fans, but all wrestling fans are not MMA fans.
Exactly.
It doesn't go. Yeah, it doesn't reciprocate. Yeah,
I don't think that there's. I mean, if you were to put all the wrestling fans in a room, majority of them would not be MMA fans. You'd be surprised.
Yeah. Although you know, it's weird. You know, the WrestleMania that you fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
When we were there. I've been with Chael, you know, at a lot of events, and he was noticed more there than at some MMA events.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, everybody was, Chael, even if they didn't want a picture, they was chanting his name, and...
It was weird, when I came out to give you guys the tickets, you guys were just standing all by yourselves, and everyone was walking by. Remember, I was talking to you about it, I was like, no one knew who you were. I swear to God, 2 minutes before you got here, there was a group of people around me.
Yeah, it's always a little hit or miss. That is true.
There actually was. I know no one's going to believe that, but there was a guy that was dressed up like Shane Helms.
Okay, yeah.
You know, Hurricane Helms?
Yeah.
Who is a big-time MMA fan. I was talking to him on my podcast, and he was talking with Tom Lawler, and he knew fights that Tom did that, you know, I didn't even fucking know.
Helms.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is a fan. He tweets.
He's a producer for TNA, which... What's that popping?
Did you hear this stuff?
Oh.
Your bubble wrap that you're going to need to put this microphone...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought you were gimmicking
to
the ADD. No, yeah. Helms before that was what? FRB, let me ask you a question. Let's turn the table on you.
Sure.
You don't have to give any names.
Right.
But it's like, I'm always fascinated with, like, the guys like Meltzer and Wade Keller and how these guys get their information.
Yeah.
And, you know, off record, I've asked them, you know, hey, you know, and they never reveal their sources. I don't need sources. But I do want to know, from someone who is not working in the industry, how do you become so informed? Tell me as much as you're willing to say.
Well, I guess because I have a little bit of an audience on Twitter. People in MMA put a lot of emphasis on Twitter. So they're like, oh, this guy's got however many followers. He's got some influence. Maybe I want to be on his good side. So I'll give him some information here and there just to keep him happy.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. I'm just theorizing that might be the reason they think that. I don't know. What do you think, Chael?
Well, no, I think that's right. And it's Brian will also crucify somebody if they burn him or they're rude to him in person. So people have extra motivation to stay on his good side, and people give him a lot of information. I mean, that's just a
but
reality.
But let me ask you this.
He's going to get it anyway. You might as well be the one to give it to him keep him happy. He's going to get
it. So you don't reach out, or do you? Let's say a story breaks. Let's say you don't know Chael, and you hear Chael gets popped or something. Would you go out and say, I need to pursue this story? Or would the story come to you? Hey, did you hear the story, Chael, you know, blah, 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 this and that. And then you decide what you're going to do with that information.
Well, that's a tough question because it depends.
Yeah.
It depends because, you know, I don't play this fake, I'm impartial guy, a journalist. I'm not a journalist, and I'm certainly not impartial. I have my friends in this industry, and they'll be my friends for a long fucking time because I'm not burning anybody that I broke bread with and built up some sort of relationship sure. with. It's just, you know, not something I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So are you the type of guy, like, tomorrow when we're at Global Force,
right.
every time you're around, am I going to look at you and you're just going to be working your phone because you always got something going?
Well, no, it's not even so much that I have something going. It's a really bad habit, you know?
So you might be on your phone, but you might just be checking Twitter or looking yeah, at scores it's or something.
It's a really bad habit. I've had people say, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing that? I'm like, I'm sorry. It's nothing you're saying. It's, you know,
right.
You know, like,
yeah.
No, it's interesting. I was curious how that world.
But I mean, to answer your question, there are some stories that will come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some stories that you have to uncover. And you kind of have to kind of take a look at who's bringing them to you
mm-hmm.
and what could be their motivation to wanting to bring that to me. Because I'm known not to have much of a filter. So they'll say, oh, he'll just run with anything.
Ah.
And, you know, that's not the case. I'm not to say that I'm perfect, that I have a flawless track record, but pretty fucking close.
Very close.
Well, I mean, just being in the wrestling industry, there's things that we have planned that last minute get changed. So let's say I'm the one feeding you information. Sure. I could be giving you legit information. 5 minutes before we air, yeah. something gets changed. You're now wrong, but you weren't wrong.
That's actually a good point. I've had a couple people. Even Dave Meltzer on his message board like defended me, and he's like, "Yeah, technically he was wrong on this, but when he said it, he was absolutely right."
Right.
So you know, I mean, I know they say, "Well, it's better to be right. That's the only thing that matters." Well, you know what? If I waited until everything was out, nobody's talking about me. That's my gimmick to get this out there.
Sure.
And I have to weigh the pros and cons of the integrity of the information. And if I think it's legit, it's going out on Twitter.
Sure.
You just got credited for announcing Bisping's next fight, right?
Yeah, versus Whitaker.
Explain why, and I'm a Bisping fan, so I don't mean this in a bad way. Why is it that Bisping continuously fights these guys that either we don't know who they are or they do nothing for him?
I mean, honestly, dude, I people thought I was joking. I had to Google this Whitaker guy because, you know, the person that I was talking to who had knowledge of this event, because I also broke the main event, I was like, Bisping's fighting who? You know, because Bisping's talking about, you know, he's talking about he wants a title fight, he wants Henderson.
And that's the hype around every victory he has. Well, you know, can he now ascend to the title?
But
he fights backwards, yeah. It seems like.
But I'll tell you, Bisping is a really good worker. And
great, one of the best.
Yeah, one of the best workers. I've also had the opportunity to talk a little bit with his dad. His dad's like his biggest fan. He's at all the events, and he's as big a fan as I am. You know, just about the
didn't know that.
About the whole industry. His name is Jan. And hell of a nice guy. And he basically spelled it out, you know, Michael is not, from what I could tell, not a pro wrestling guy, but everything his dad was saying, 100% pro wrestling. So he's pro wrestling without knowing he's pro wrestling.
He's like one of those guys that almost finds his way into pro wrestling, and he probably would have if there was an MMA.
Yeah. Last time I saw him was when you fought Jones
right.
in Newark. Yeah.
Yeah, he fought that night.
Yeah, against Belcher.
Yeah, that's right.
But being an insider, though, FRB, why do you think these fights get booked for him? You don't see any other top star booked the way Bisping is booked.
Can you imagine Chael's record if he got the Jabronis? Right, yeah.
If he had Bisping's career, this guy would be undefeated.
Because Chael has this friend in West Lynn that I despise, and I won't even mention his name.
Joel?
And, like, yeah, he's only...
Joel, can I tell people why? What Joel did to get on your bad side.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Front Row Brian, right? Front Row Brian. Joel calls him Front Row Drunkie because we went to breakfast and over pancakes, Brian orders about 7 beers.
Wow.
This is it. We're literally having pancakes. It's breakfast time. Joel wasn't totally wrong to go, hey man, you're part, and Brian's like, I'm on vacation. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
That was his whole thing, but Brian will not let it go. He was so insulted.
I can't do anything until eating a proper breakfast first. Like, don't ask me to, like, even if I wake up late, I can't have lunch.
Sure.
I need to have breakfast. I could never have a beer.
You are that way.
Before having breakfast.
You're also a pancake guy. You'll probably have them tomorrow morning.
I'll probably have pancakes, yes.
Brian is so mad that this guy called him drunkie, front row drunkie.
What was my point, though, with that story?
Well, you started out, I had a friend in Bisping. West Lynn. Bisping. We were talking about Bisping. We went into
how he's booked.
Oh, yeah, because fucking Joel, he's a piece of shit, number one. But he's always downplaying Chael's record in the UFC. Oh, he's 7-6. Whatever the fuck his record is.
But you still never lost a fight.
Yeah, undefeated.
Let's be honest. Anyone who ever says that you lost a fight has never been in one.
Tell me what you mean. Because I felt like I lost a couple of them. Tell me what you mean.
The triangle is a refuge of cowards.
Garbage. That's refuge. That lost a round. I really didn't know that rule.
You could use that fight as an example.
Sure.
Okay, so I couldn't say it any different than you said in the press conference. You beat him up for 22 and a half minutes. He wraps his legs around you. You get uncomfortable. You get uncomfortable and you go, you don't tap out, but you essentially tell the referee, okay, let's stop right here and go to the judges' cards. Like, I think I got enough of an advantage. We're good here.
Give him a 10-7. He still would.
Yeah. Give him this round. That's fine. You said, let's end it. And it was beneficial to him the way the fight was going.
Right.
It was beneficial to end it right there. We go to the cards. Crosby must have been on there. But that's what I'm talking about. Have you ever, like, Chael, have you ever gone into sparring and you're just landing everything? And then this guy hits you with the last shot. He didn't win the fight. He knocked you down, but you kicked his ass.
Sure.
And every fight I've ever seen you in, I mean, geez, I would even say you impressed me more in the John Jones fight than you did in any of the Anderson Silva fights.
When he limped out of there?
He didn't limp. He got carried out.
You were 2.5 minutes away from being the middleweight champion. You were 30 seconds away from being the light heavyweight champion. And I don't think there was a loss in between there. You could have been holding two belts at once.
Yeah. And I'm only 6 good wins away from being the heavyweight champion.
Now, doesn't it make you feel better knowing how hard...
6 good wins away.
Does it make you feel better knowing how hard John Jones worked in that training camp?
You know, that guy's a special guy, man.
Did he not? Did he Tyson that? Oh, okay.
John Jones isn't training for anybody.
He doesn't need
to. Wasn't just me. He's not training for anybody. But I think your point that you were getting at about Joel giving me a hard time was, it does matter who you fought. You know, record's going to be affected when you're fighting. My last 4 fights were world champions, and they were hammers, and you're just not going to win all those fights.
Chael, the easiest fight that you had, I mean, and this is so insane to say, Shogun.
Yeah.
It was the easiest fight. And Shogun, along with John Jones, the two best light heavyweights to ever live. I don't want to hear about Chuck Liddell. Shogun and John Jones, and John Jones is better. But, I mean, that was the easiest fight. When Shogun's your easiest fucking fight, you're fighting some hammers.
Yeah, they would give me some hammers, and largely,
they wanted to give you guys. They wanted to give you fucking Rockhold.
Remember? On an easy fight.
Yeah, Joe Silva.
That same card? That was your first...
A different card they wanted to give me, Rockhold.
Coming over fresh from...
They thought it was a...
Rockhold?
My answer is just yes, but when I hang up, I still... Inside, I have my thoughts. I'm going, I don't know what you guys are seeing, but that Luke Rockhold kid can fight. I remember thinking that. Who told you he's an easy fight?
So they wanted to give you a showcase fight. Just to kind of get
things back on track.
Instead of the Shogun fight, it was going
to
be Rockhold.
Go back to 185 and fight Rockhold. And my managers were on board. I had people in the sport going, yeah, okay, let's do that. Let's get a night off. And I'm going, Luke Rockhold, like what tapes are you guys watching? You know, I'll take the fight, but I just don't agree with the easy. I don't agree. I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, because Rockhold, the only fights he's lost was to a juiced up Vitor, and then like his first or second fight.
What, did he lose to Jacare, or did he beat him?
He beat him.
He beat fucking impressive. Tim Kennedy, who's a fucking, he's tough like as
four
shit.
Four rounds to one. Tim Kennedy's tougher than hell. Tim Kennedy is so underrated, and he'll do certain things that agitate people so they don't want to compliment him. It's like, look, even if Tim agitates you, be fair. That guy is a straight-up badass. And he is.
Yeah.
Is his greatest skill taking a punch more than giving one?
Tim Kennedy can do it all. He can wrestle like you want. His jiu-jitsu is phenomenal. He took on Hodger.
He
gave up his back early and dry.
He submitted him, right?
No, but he kicked Hodger's ass.
Yeah.
He kicked Hodger Grace's
ass. You sure he didn't submit him?
Oh, well, 500% sure. Yeah. Tim Kennedy submit Hodger Gracie?
I think he did.
No.
This is in UFC, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, go ahead, but you're wrong. Yeah, nobody submitted Hodger.
Because he impressed me somehow with jiu-jitsu in that fight.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Hodger took his back. Tim took him down. It largely did take place on the ground. Tim landed some big leg kicks, and other than that, he just took him down and beat him up in Hodger's world. Now, there was no gi. It was totally his world, but yeah. No, there was. He definitely did not finish him.
Wasn't that like, who were we just talking about? Who was his opponent?
Joel?
Jacare?
Yeah, piece of shit.
We'll go back to him. No, Tim Kennedy's, we were just talking
Luke about. Ruckel.
No, Tim Kennedy, the guy we just were talking about, submitting.
Hodger Gracie?
Yeah. He was kind of one and done in UFC, wasn't he?
He was one and done. Yeah. He had that fight and they let him go because
they brought
him
over from Strikeforce.
Yeah, but the contract was
huge money.
Huge money. Yeah. They're like, we can't do that.
So then I think he went to 1FC and then just said, the hell with this. I don't want to do MMA anymore.
Straight jiu-jitsu now.
Wants to make a lot of money. I mean, are there any Gracies? I mean, I think the last Gracie who could actually fight was Henzo.
Yeah, that's probably right.
And the crazy one. The crazy one that died.
Hyen
was probably, maybe he could have been legit.
Yeah.
But he was fucking nuts.
Yeah, that's just a cool story there. Their story of coming to Los Angeles from Brazil and having those fights out of the garage. I think that's just a cool
Dojo
story.
Storming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of a legendary story that not enough people know about. Like, literally, they had to get jiu-jitsu on the map, and they basically said, let's test it against anybody. And if you want to fight, come to the garage.
Right.
People would bring their crew, and they'd kick everybody's ass. It's really cool.
It's one way to do it. Yeah, I mean, it's the hard way. It's the most grassroots
way. It's the hard way, yeah.
And they could have done it a hell of a lot quicker if YouTube and Twitter had existed when they were trying to.
Could you imagine, yeah.
Just let the stories go.
Yeah, and hope this guy leaves, or the people that saw it go, I'm going to leave this guy's gym, and I'm going to come over here.
Right.
And I mean, I guess UFC is their YouTube, because UFC was essentially an infomercial for Gracie Jiu-Jitsu.
Right.
Horian.
And it worked.
Yeah, well, they owned the UFC.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was probably like a co-promote thing, right, with whoever did it.
Campbell McLaren.
He had some partners, but.
But, Joe,
Gracie,
could you imagine
Gracie
risking everything?
It.
You literally saying, look, no one can kick my ass. And going, let's do it. Bring a camera. Pay to see it, and then you kick everybody's ass.
They had to be pretty sure that their style worked, didn't
they? And then they even didn't put the best bet in the tournament.
Now, chill, when you were in Provo at BYU, was there a match, somebody stormed the room, did Hickson show up and take on Tank?
No. But you're very close. So Hickson Gracie rolls into town to open up Pedro Sauer's gym.
Pedro Sauer, okay.
Now, what time frame on this?
When he freshman in college?
Yeah, it was just before I got there. So I got there in 95. This would have been 94, 93.
So UFC is on pay-per-view.
Yes.
And early years.
And, you know, Chael was a big mark for Mark Schultz.
Uh-huh.
And that's why he won.
Yeah. World Champion, the greatest wrestlers ever.
The movie.
Sure. Foxcatcher. Perfect. Foxcatcher. Yeah. So, great story, though. So, Hickson Gracie comes to town to promote Pedro Sauer's gym. Pedro Sauer was the sixth Gracie-affiliated gym to open in all of America at that time. So Hickson himself comes out to promote it. What you promote back then, and again, to remind you guys, there's no Twitter, there's no, the word Facebook hadn't been created yet, there's no MySpace. So he's doing it the old-fashioned way, which is going to the radio station. So he's at the radio station, and the DJ's saying to him, he's kind of talking about this art of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. No one knows what it is.
Yeah.
UFC was around, so you know a couple people did. But UFC,
but no one knew that that's what it was. Right. No one knew it was a promotion.
So Hickson says, I can take on anybody. Who's your guys' toughest guy? I could beat him. And the DJ's like, oh, really? Really? And Hickson's like, yeah. And he goes, well, the toughest guy in these parts is named Mark Schultz. He's a two-time world champion. He's an Olympic gold medalist.
And he's a little crazy.
I don't think you could take him. And Hickson's like, I will kick his ass. Hickson did not back down a bit. So they call Mark Schultz. And I don't know if this was live on the radio or if they did it off the air, but they called Mark Schultz and got a hold of him. Mark answered the phone.
Real thing, or real quick, for the people that don't really know who he is and maybe did see the movie, he's the one that was killed.
No.
That's,
he's the brother.
That's Dave.
Yes. He's the brother.
He's
more accomplished.
He's still alive.
Yeah, but he's what's honorary. Channing Tatum.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Exactly
just
right.
Just so
Channing
yeah.
Tatum in the movie. So at any rate, they get a hold of Mark. Mark doesn't know that a radio show just happened. Or they might have called Mark on the radio, but whatever it was, Mark did not know anybody else could hear this. He thought he was being challenged to a fight by some random guy. So Mark tells him, meet me at the BYU wrestling room in 2 hours. Now, Mark's theory, and he's admitted this after the fact, was that if he could do it in the wrestling room, he could do a murder and get away with it. That if it was in the wrestling room, he could do a murder, and yeah, I think he calls it a homicide.
He's not accountable for it. Yeah.
Yes, and call it while we were working out.
Yeah,
things got we were working out. So right, house show.
Yeah, there you go,
house show.
So he shows up to the BYU wrestling room. Well, when he pulls in, he can't get into the building. There's so many people there. He doesn't know that this whole thing went out on a DJ's radio show. He thought this was a private deal. So, and I don't know either if the call went out or if Hickson then went back in the studio and goes, all right, I got Mark Schultz and I'm meeting him in 2 hours. But anyway, it was so full he couldn't even get into the building. So he works his way through the people. He gets into the wrestling room, which is packed. They make a space, and this guy comes up to him, and Hickson had the blood sport ponytail back then.
Awesome.
A long ponytail. And Hickson comes up, introduces himself, and he says, no biting, no eye gouging. When we get to the mat, no strikes to the face. Other than that, anything else goes. Well, Mark Schultz had never trained a day of fighting. The UFC had just, he's a straight-up wrestler, and he was done wrestling for about 7 or 8 years.
So he hadn't entered UFC yet, because he did go into UFC, okay.
No,
he went to UFC in 96 in Detroit against Gary Goodrich.
And he won, didn't he?
He won.
And he won.
Yeah.
And
that was it? Not to take away from the story.
No, well,
but Hickson does set these rules, which Mark Schultz is mad about to this day. He's mad because he thought he was showing. Oh yeah, and he's telling you the story. I was going to pull out his jugular vein. And I was going to blah blah blah. Now people can talk tough when Mark Schultz tells you he was planning to pull out a guy's jugular vein. He was planning to pull out his jugular vein. He's telling the truth. He was going to do a murder. Yeah.
But he
chalked it up to defend himself, and he'd sleep easy at night. This is common.
And put it this way: Chael's always respectful to coaches, so he won't say it, but I'll say it. Mark Schultz is not operating at 100% capacity. Yeah.
Sorry. That was me.
he's a little crazy. So I think he meant
go
it.
Watch the movie. Yeah, go watch Boxing. Yeah, he'll tell the story to this day and everybody laughs when he says it. He's not kidding.
He's serious.
He was gonna
What's
do...
the outcome of that, of this fight now?
Okay, so when Mark shows up, this is relevant though. I have to tell this part of the story
before
I get to that. When Mark shows up, Hickson tells him, no biting, no eye gouging, and when we get to the ground, no strikes to the face. So now it's not a fight. If you get a guy on the ground and all of a sudden you can't, but it's not a fight anymore, but Mark can't back down because there's people there. Mark wanted to tell him, well, that's not a fight. You challenged me to fight. Let's fight. But Mark can't say that because there's people everywhere. So he just says, fine. So they go out and they fight. And, and Hickson says, and when you've had enough, just tap out. Now, Hickson, I don't think, in Hickson's defense, he knew he's talking to the Olympic at World Show. I don't think Hickson understood.
Both these guys have no idea who they're talking to.
You don't think Hickson knew?
Or didn't know? I don't know. Maybe Hickson was that famous.
I don't know.
Mark Schultz in his prime walks in a room.
Sure.
You're like, that guy's a fucking
badass.
You take
one look at him. Yeah, he's got the ears, the crazy eyes, he's muscled up.
I mean, he's
up,
55 years old, he's still formidable.
He still put those crazy eyes on you. You look at those ears, and you know.
He did a thing on Flow Wrestling, like a documentary with Mark Bader.
Loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
So to finish the story real quick, they fight for 20 minutes.
Wow.
And Hickson eventually just goes down and lays on his back. And Mark doesn't know what to do. And Mark jumps on him and Hickson locks up a triangle. Oh, but Hickson had said to him, when you've had enough, just tap out.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mark looks at him and goes, and when you've had enough, you just tap out. And my impersonation of Mark Schultz is spot on. If we called Mark Schultz right, you go, wow, chill, you're really good at impressions. So Mark Schultz is going to go in there and pull out his jugular vein. Do a homicide on this guy, get him in the wrestling. You know, it's a really, really great story, but Hickson did win. Well, Mark.
From the triangle.
Yeah, but Mark didn't find this, like, oh, I still went 20 minutes with a guy that's had
tap out?
Fights or whatever. Yeah, tapped him out in the triangle or passed him out.
Okay.
So Mark goes, Mark gets up and shakes his hand. He's a sportsman, but he goes crazy inside and instantly goes and joins the gym. He went and joined the Pedro Sauer gym and got his black belt in jiu-jitsu.
Oh, my God.
In his head, thinking someday I'm going to rematch that Hickson Gracie. I mean, that's just the kind of competitor that Mark Schultz is. It wasn't about money or fame. It was a personal thing. A guy beat me. That'll never happen again. He went and got his
partner. But this fight probably wasn't as good as the YouTube Kimbo versus the MMA guy at that gym, probably.
Gannon.
That fight was probably better, right?
Yes, much better. Much more technical.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure. I just wanted to make sure. Okay, real quick, is Foxcatcher.
Yeah.
Can you explain to me, I mean, I knew the story a little bit, but you watch the movie, I guess my only question is, what, like, DuPont has money, he's a mark, right, essentially, for amateur wrestling, and he goes and does what now, like, he goes and he says, hey, I want to be involved.
Right.
So I'm gonna put my money behind this,
right?
And I'm essentially, he does the Steven Seagal. I want people to think I'm training these guys, so now I'm the tough guy,
right?
Okay, that's just the story.
That's all accurate, yeah.
And the Schultz brothers at one point eventually just go, "Hey, we need a place to train. He's feeding us
super
and our
close.
Families." Okay, explain, well, like, because I'm so confused.
I'm going to just re-say what you, I'm going to say basically what you just said. So he went to buy his way into wrestling, which you can do. If I had a ton of money, I'm a wrestling fan too, but that is how you get in if you're an outsider. You got to buy your way in. Okay. Every NASCAR, whatever. But yes, wrestling was no different. So he made a deal with USA Wrestling, put up $500,000 a year, guaranteed, in exchange. The national championship was then named after him, the Johnny DuPont Nationals.
Okay.
And then he creates a wrestling facility there on the farm, at Foxcatcher Farm. Now, Foxcatcher Farm had the mansion he lived in, but then a whole bunch of homes were on it as well.
Yeah.
So he could bring these wrestlers in, give them a home. Then he's got the wrestling room. Now they got a place to train. In addition, he gave them a monthly stipend. Well, in wrestling, that didn't happen. You win Olympic gold medal, you're not getting a dollar.
So this is the place to go.
This is absolutely, I mean, Kurt Angle trained there, the Schultz brothers, you can go on and on. I can impress you with the names that this brought in.
Yeah.
But it's going to. If you can get a guy $2,500 a month, a home, food, a training, in wrestling, that doesn't happen. To this day, that doesn't happen. So that's what he did. He bought his way. And then all of a sudden, after he got these guys out there, now all of a sudden he wants to be the coach. Well, the guys, as a matter of respect, just allowed this to go on. Now, none of them bought him as a coach, but it's like, well, what do we do? We live here. He owns the place.
And really, who cares,
right? And now he's on the
match,
right? And at the end of the day, it's 20 minutes a day.
Yeah.
You let the guy show his crappy tech. Who cares? You chalk it up to a laugh when he leaves the room. So, at any rate, yeah, that's what happened. And the guy was crazy. He had no level of success. He was a billionaire, but he didn't succeed at anything. It was family money. He's a DuPont.
Yeah.
So they just gave him this money.
But is there, they didn't really explain in the movie so much. Is there a story as to why he did what he did?
The murder, or why did he get behind wrestling?
The murder.
No one has any idea, and he never spoke on it. Something happened where he got his feelings hurt. He had mental issues to start with. Something happened, very small, where he got his feelings hurt, and he took out the gun, I believe it was a 38, and shot him repeatedly at essentially point blank range, you know, 50 feet.
And then
he was a marksman. Don't forget that. But John DuPont trained the Philadelphia Police Department in marksmanship. So, I mean,
so he actually was good at something.
Is my point. Yeah.
And then so I don't even know if I think the movie ends with his capture. What happens with the team at that point?
So the team, is gone.
This is good because this is good.
So DuPont goes to prison and never gets out. They when they bring him in, they don't like release him on his own recognizance. He never gets out. Eventually, he died in prison. But when he went in, he still had these deals in place with certain guys who were training for the Nationals. And this was in 96, which means the Nationals feeds right into the Olympic trials. 96 was Olympic year. So you've got the finest wrestlers in America. Kurt Angle is one of them. So, used some wrestling. The Brands brothers, both Olympic medalists, world champions. I mean, big name wrestlers. Mark Kerr. You have these big name wrestlers. And they still had deals with Foxcatcher. Well, even from jail, the estate was paying these guys. So these guys get to Nationals. Now, they're bros with Dave Schultz. They're disgusted. They're hard. They're everything else. They're under contract. So when they got to the Nationals, they still represented John DuPont. They still represented Foxcatcher. They wore the uniforms. They put it down on the sheet.
But, chill, was there really a contract?
They were getting... They regret their decisions greatly to this day and have profusely apologized to Dave's family, and his wife, Nancy, accepted their apology, even though it really
didn't Nancy hurt. Start her own wrestling club?
Yes, she did. Right
and
away.
Weren't you a member of it?
I was a member of it. I know all this firsthand. Nancy was greatly hurt, but she accepted their apology and has forgiven them. And these guys were kids, you know. In their defense, they were kids.
How do they know that this does... Yeah.
Angle was a boy. I mean... It's not.
And what was
the vision on this is very clear. It really wasn't that clear back then.
Angle rep Foxcatcher?
Yeah.
Wow.
But Angle was trained by all these guys were trained by Dave. Dave Schultz was the head coach out there. So they respect they just didn't know what to do. It's like, hey, we're still everything's moving forward. We're just, you know, John's gone. That's how they looked at it.
So this is no different than if I had some money behind me, I can start a gym. And I can go to UChill and I can go, listen, man, I'm gonna put you up in a house. I'm going to pay you this per month. Bring your family in here. I'm now Chael Sonnen's head coach. Yeah. I can tell you, go get
that is happening
these
right
other
now.
Guys. It is happening.
The Black Stallions have essentially done it. And so the hope is that will catch on more and more. But it hasn't. The Blacks, Glenn Robinson's done a great job of organizing.
But I would obviously call
Glenn's
in a head
defense,
coach.
Though, in, Glenn, yes. In Glenn's defense, he never calls himself a coach.
That's true. Well, I didn't mean it as a
he hires a real coach.
Yeah, I think the whole I think that what Glenn's doing is awesome, and we wish as an industry this would spread. You know, if you got more of these NASCAR type guys, you know, Glenn Robinson is a major NASCAR type approach to MMA, where he's going, listen, I'm going to roll out the red car, you know, Mark Cuban style approach. I'm going to do everything right and just hope that turns into a really good team. And it's a loss. It is a hobby for him. So, but if we had more guys like that, if we have guys like this all over the country. Well, you know.
So he's taking a loss on that, but he's a fan. He wants to be involved.
It's a fan,
this how he
it's a hobby.
Is he walking with them to the cage and standing on
no,
the cage?
No, none of it's for him whatsoever. No, which is weird. I think he should put himself. I think he deserves to put himself in there more, but it doesn't appear to be his interest.
The only I can only remember like a few times people would thank him in the ring, and it was like it kind of looked like it was rehearsed,
sure.
Like he was told. Thank Glenn Robinson.
Right. That doesn't mean he was told by Glenn.
But, Chael, this will be disrespectful to anyone who's ever trained you or worked with you, and I don't mean it that way.
Sure, go ahead.
Has there been a fight that you've won that you would have lost if me and FRB were cornering you in a fight?
Oh,
And I'm not talking about because they're so important, because they are, they got you there,
no,
but once you're there...
You would have won a lot more fights with me in the corner. Come on.
I'll answer it two ways. Had you guys coached me, it would be different. The coaching was incredible, the preparation. The night of the fight, the actual corner is much less important. Now, corners don't know that, and they would be insulted. But
and I don't mean it that way.
Mean it that way when I say it either. The preparation beforehand, though, I mean, the hay was in the barn.
Although he's had a couple of jamokes. He's had a couple of jamokes in his corner.
Over time?
Absolutely. You know who I'm talking about.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been fighting since 1997. Yeah, I've had a little bit of a revolving door there. But okay. but the actual now I'm told in the boxing world that that's different. I'm told that in a boxing world how important your corner is. I'm not positive that's true. I think the boxers say that to be nice.
Well, I could say from a fan watching both on television and hearing the corners, it seems like there's more of a strategy given in a boxing match. They come back, hey, hit this one, right. Two, this, that, blah, blah, blah. When I see in UFC, it's more like you got them. This is your round. Go out there, impose your will. It's kind of like, so it's already programmed in me. Yeah. You're just reminding me of what it is I have to
do. Have you ever gotten instruction between the rounds that made you win a fight?
No, I never have, but I mean, it's definitely been helpful. Again, I'm talking specifically on this about during the competition, not in preparation.
Yeah.
But here's my problem, Brian. I don't know that goes for all. Most athletes are like me, but not all. The problem that we run into is we're exhausted. It doesn't matter how hard you train, what kind of shape you're in.
You can't process it.
You can't process it. We are absolutely exhausted. In between rounds, all you're trying to do is get some air, hopefully get a drink of water, and just relax for that 60 seconds as best you can. It is a terrible experience. The whole thing in the ring is a terrible experience. And there's no ability to process or focus or listen. You know, when Matt Lindland used to corner me, he would talk to me, and I'd be processing, just dying, just sitting on the bed, dying, just trying to get my air back so I can go back and, you know, sprint again for 5 more minutes. And he would then want an acknowledgement. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? And I'd have to look at it, and then he'd want to talk. He'd want me to respond. It's like, man, do you not see how tired I am? But he is an athlete, but never got tired, so he didn't get it.
Matt operates on a different level of toughness. There's tough, and then there's Matt Lindland tough.
Yeah, you're right. What, he is different.
Yeah, he's a different breed. What is your, do you have like a favorite Matt Lindland story?
Oh, Matt Lindland stories are so good.
They're legendary. Like,
yeah, I mean, my favorite is what he did with the Cuban with the teeth. And I'll happily retell that story.
Yeah, let's hear it, man. All
right.
This is producer Jake. We're going to end part one of this FRB show with a bit of a cliffhanger to hear the second half of this conversation and the Matt Lindland story. You're going to have to wait until Wednesday morning when we post the second half. As always, you can follow these guys on Twitter at SonnenCH, at John as himself, and of course at Front Row Brian. Also, follow Tom Lawler at Filthy Tom Lawler, myself at The MMA Podcast, and the show's Twitter at Filthy FRB Show. You can also visit FRBShow.com for links to subscribe to the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on Wednesday for the second half of the episode. Take care.